Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do.
If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Sax and Jax. I'm Tom Holland. This is Brennan Cornanis with us as well. We have S&P futures. We're trying to make a rally here this morning. Up 25.75. Dow futures up 189. NASDAQ futures up 91. It would look great. Actually, it does look great, except for the fact that yesterday we were sort of in the right same spot, actually a little higher, and turned around and had an awful day. Matter of fact, we went from up to something in the Dow to down 450 and closed, I think, down 411 or something. So yesterday was a big turnaround Monday. Brendan, how are you? Turnaround Tuesday, too, or no?
Turnaround Tuesday. How are you? I'm doing well, Chief.
Everything going good? You're staying out of the way of the virus? You're staying out of the way of your governor and your mayor and everybody?
Yes, I am. I'm back on our side of the, on the west side of the lake. I'm over in Chicago again right now. We came back yesterday because of doctor's appointments.
Well, that's good. Assuming you can, do you have to do like COVID tests to go see doctors and stuff or what?
Well, Val injured herself, so she, just went into the doctors. I think she was tested when she got into the waiting room. I wasn't permitted to go with her because they only allow, unless you really need assistance, they don't allow anybody else to attend with the patient.
I know. I think this is going to be with us kind of forever.
I do, too.
We have...
So do you vote in Illinois or do you vote in Michigan now?
You vote both places.
I vote early and often, as they say in the Democratic circles. No, I'm still registered here in Illinois, so I'm... We're filling out our ballots today, and we're going to walk down and drop them in the box.
There you go.
I just have a question. I know it's because in my area the precinct is so close, but what is the attraction if you're actually going to be around in this early voting?
To avoid the crowds. You should have smaller crowds voting now on early voting. I typically do early voting, and I've gone down to the super center, voting center that's down, usually it's down on like 69 West Washington, or sometimes they have another place on Washington or Monroe, and it's usually very quickly. Usually there's no more than three or four people in line, and I get in and out very quickly.
I asked your brother, Chief, Dan Howe, the president of PTI Securities and third baseman for our softball team for many years. The same question, because I've never voted early and never seen the point of it, and he gave a very good answer. He said he did it for the first time this year, and it was the best voting experience he'd ever had, because he sat down for the first time, had a beer in his house for 2 hours, and studied every single judge, every single person that was running, and made an informed decision on every single one of them, instead of going into the booth, there's people waiting in line after you. You vote no for all the judges. You leave half your ballot blank, and then you vote for the two people you know about, and you feel like, what did I just do? And that actually made a lot of sense to me.
Well, see, and the judges, even though I don't know very many of the judges, I go with the recommendations of the Chicago Bar Association and the Illinois State Bar Association. And so I do research in advance, and I have a little sheet that I take with me, like the palm card, so to speak. With me when I go in to vote. But I agree with Dan that it's a really good way to sit down. And although you're distinguishing early voting from early in-person voting, I thought Chief was asking about early in-person voting. But in my case now, I just want to avoid the crowds on election day. And typically when I say I go in and vote early in the super sites, I usually do that within a week of the election.
I talked to my man Roy last night. Of course, was giving him grief about it because a week ago Sunday, You went and voted. There were 200 people in line at the same place you're talking about, Brendan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I'm blessed. I have a spot. Literally walk out the front door. Maybe, what are we, 100 yards to the left is the polling place.
Right, and I've never seen much of a line. I mean, occasionally there'll be, you know, if you go first thing in the morning before people go to work or whatever, you might see a little bit of a line, but never a significant line.
I've waited. The most I ever waited was, I was late one day. It was like 5:30. It was three people, and that's in 20 years. And I've never missed an election.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, and again, even though...
So what's your response to what Dan said? I thought it was actually a really good answer.
That actually would make some sense. It's actually about the first good answer I've heard, to be honest with you.
It makes perfect sense, and now I'm kicking myself that I've never done it, because I don't have the cheat sheet, or if I did, I feel like, I don't know.
Let me help you. I don't want to vote for you, but let me help you. You don't need a cheat sheet in our district. There's nobody there to vote for. Quigley's unopposed.
That's not true. There's always like 20. Yeah. There's always like 20 yeah. judges. There's, you know, some, there's these, a couple unopposed, but for the most part, they're all running against
our state rep.
Judges are the really key area, I think, because, like Manny said, oftentimes I'll not vote. What I used to have to vote for half the judges, or, you know, it's very common allegedly here in Cook County, is if you've got an Irish name, you're pretty much guaranteed retention.
I did some research on this, Brent. And once in a while, you know, I get to trump you on research. Not Trump, not Trump. A few years ago.
Are you
ago,
defending our president again?
I am defending him in a little bit on this vote thing. I think it's too far, too fast. The reason why I say that is, well, I'll get back to my judge story in a second, but the reason why I say that is, I think there's a certain discipline to the process. I have the same problem with this I do with seeing a video of a crime and everybody forming their own opinion without hearing all the evidence. The video is a piece of the evidence. It might be 90% of it, and it might be that 90% of the time you can make your call from somebody's video off their cell phone, but there's that other 10% that sets us apart from the rest of the world. And, mm-hmm. and people are ready to basically bleep can that 10%, and I'm not. So whenever I get down the street, there's four people. Everybody has there's a Democratic judge or a judge, right, and a Republican judge. I walk in, I give them my name, they pull out my thingy, and all of a sudden there's my signature, I sign the thing, they check it, everybody says, okay, over you go. And I don't see how the hell, and I, one of the friend of mine, a lady years ago, has been election judge forever, and she said back in the day they used to bring the absentee ballots to the precinct.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, you counted the absentee ballots and say, Brendan was in vacation in Michigan or wherever, and he was gone. By the way, here's his absentee ballot, and we're going to look and see. Guess what? Brendan did not vote in person, so it's got to be him, and the signature matches. There was a discipline to the process, and all of a sudden, you know, when the year Forrest Claypool didn't get in, and he walked down to the county, they all of a sudden made this unilateral decision to count all the absentee ballots at the county building. Well, I wouldn't trust those people as far as I could throw them, and so now I'm wondering. Are we checking signatures? Are the same people checking them? Are the people who've been the judges forever that actually know the people coming there to vote? I'm not saying they know everybody. I mean, there was some discipline to the system. Did we just bleep can the entire discipline, or what?
No. As I understand it, they still check the signatures when they come in. I thought that they were still going to the precincts for counting.
Oh, no.
Maybe they did.
No.
Sure about that.
No.
There is a process. But Chief, what is so sacrosanct about voting on this year November 3rd as opposed to November 1st, November 2nd?
Well, if we're going to do this, I would have done like France. Let's vote on Saturday and Sunday like they do. Make it convenient for people.
All right. So you're not opposed to the concept. You're just opposed to how long in advance.
I'm not opposed to the concept, and I have no problem with absentee ballots. Okay, if you're absolutely absentee, but there's all idea that. I've gotten like four things in the mail, and I got one thing in the mail from a ballot thing from Jesse White. Why? I mean, that is a solicitation with a ballot in it. I mean, I've been a whole life a Democrat, but that's over the top, Brendan. I mean, who are all these people that are all of a sudden going to vote? I mean, who's going to check the stuff coming in from Inglewood or someplace? Anybody? Does anybody care? As long as they vote the way people want them to vote?
Well, no. I'm not sure what your point is.
My point is that, as Kevin said, in Oregon, they had problems the first time. Oregon, you know, is a straighter state than Illinois, I'm going to say. So the first time they did it, they had some issues, and now after four or five elections, they do it really well. I'm saying this is an awful big move for a crooked state like Illinois to all of a sudden have all these ballots where ballots are flying into people's houses or in the mail. You know, it's not like you even have to request one; they're showing up. I mean, I guess I don't understand the system.
No, that's not correct. In Illinois, you've got to request a ballot. In Cook County, you've got to request a ballot.
I think I got one from Jesse White.
You didn't get a ballot. You got a. I got the same thing you got, and it is marked from Jesse White. I don't know if it's an application or what to get a ballot.
Okay.
Yeah, because I got the same thing.
I'm saying that we're talking about a state that is inherently crooked, and this is far afield from what we normally do things. We could have taken this more gradually, is all I'm saying.
Well, that's fair, except that the absentee ballot has been in place in Illinois for many years.
Yeah, and what percentage of the ballots was it?
Not to the extent that it is right now. And early voting has also been in Illinois for many years. The voting sites down in the county building, they have a couple of buildings downtown that they use. Each election year, it's a different one. It used to be just west of LaSalle Street on Washington, and then it was over on Madison and State. So, I mean, they have these places where you can vote early for some time. This isn't new. The number of people that are voting this time is new around Illinois and around the state, but this is not a new concept, Chief.
Well, I understand. I'm, at the end of the day, I just wonder, somebody's pushing it, Brendan. And anyway, my buddy Roy says to me, I went over and I waited in line. I said, Roy, you're in one of these high rises in the South Loop. Yeah, do you even know where your polling place is? No. It's probably in your building. If not, it's in the building across the street, and you're working from home. What could be more convenient, for God's sake? Yeah, I never thought of that. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying, Brendan. Just saying. You know, I'm not making any kind of. I just think for Illinois, it's pretty quick, pretty soon.
But also, I mean, it sounds like you're also objecting to early voting, to people voting before Election Day. And, you know, I can see waiting until Election Day if you're truly undecided and you're waiting for that last minute surprise to tip it one way or another for one of the other candidates. But if you already know who you're voting for and are pretty sure about that, what is the difference between voting today or waiting until November 3rd?
Well, why are we having a debate tonight if everybody already voted? Or Thursday?
For more information, for those who may still want to be persuaded.
I'm just saying, I've always been more for it to be more convenient for people to vote. I thought there could have been a intervening step, like instead of a Tuesday in February for the city people where you gave the city people, they used to give them the day off to go vote. I always thought that really sucked. I mean, obviously, I thought we could do a Sunday thing or a Saturday-Sunday thing like they do in Europe and make it more convenient. And there could be an intervening step, I think. And instead we go hog wild this other way. But I understand it's both ways, Brendan. I mean, I know And then Texas or something, what'd they do? Say there's going to be one box.
One drop-off ballot box per county.
And there's got to be counties.
County that has Houston and has Dallas and places like that.
There's got to be counties in Texas that are how many square miles, for God's sake?
Houston is the fourth largest city. It's right behind Chicago. And they've got one ballot box for voting drop-off in that county.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Didn't Illinois recently pass something where voting day, election day, is now a state holiday?
No.
I don't think they passed that. That was suggested in a lot of states, but I don't think it's been passed here.
All right. I thought I read something about that a couple months ago. I need to pull it up. Now, of course, no private business is going to honor that.
I think we have enough time.
But all the public ones will.
We have enough time. We got to pay public employees for doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
But again, if you're going to take voting seriously to the point where you give it a day off, why not allow for early voting so that people can go on a different day?
Well, I don't usually give.
I knew I was right about this. So Election Day is officially a state holiday in Illinois as of June 16, 2020. Government offices will be closed on November 3rd, and businesses throughout the state could follow suit.
Why don't government offices just never go to work?
That's different than what you said, Manny, that I understood. I knew that the governments were going to be closed that day for Election Day, but I thought your question was about whether people had to take the day off or were had to be granted the day off, and I don't think that's true.
So, let me get this straight. Toni Preckwinkle, all the people who work for her get the day off to go vote, where the people who can't stand her have to work and somehow work it into their schedule.
Yeah.
Essentially, yeah.
That is so screwed up. I almost.
I mean, if you're gonna, I've said for a long time, I think Election Day should be a federal holiday that everyone gets off so everyone can vote. But this idea that only the public people are closed and everyone else has to work doesn't really work.
Is there a chance, Brendan? I know you've worked for the man a few times in your career. Are these guys pushing it too hard? This whole concept with this COVID, that everybody who's a serf has to work to serve them, and yet they get to stay home. Am I the only one picking up on this or not? I must be.
Wait, I don't understand your question.
The who's idea
pushing what too hard?
I'm saying the COVID thing, that everybody who works for the government stays home and gets paid, and yet they get to go to the store, and the shelves better be full by whoever those people are, subhumans. The sandwich better show up, the mail better show up, and the garbage better go. I mean, don't they understand it? That their idea, the idea of a necessary person, in my mind, would have been like police, doctors. It wouldn't be the guy who delivers you the sandwich.
Well, except that you've got to eat.
Well, but I'm saying they think those people they don't count as people or what?
No, I'm not defending that. I'm not defending that argument at all. But I do think that the idea that people are trying to do is trying to mitigate the disease, and we're seeing another big spread around the country, in the upper Midwest in particular, of areas. So how do you mitigate this? How do you balance
Brennan,
economy open with people getting sick?
You've been on first of all, fortunately, a lot of people who are testing positive are not sick. Matter of fact, the tremendous majority are not sick.
Mm-hmm.
So, the day I read the first serious study out of Korea, it had to be March, about this disease, I read that and I realized this is what's going to happen. It was not containable. It was not containable in March. It's not containable now. And we should just be very happy that it appears to have weakened at a point where the hospitalizations are way down, the deaths are way down, and the significant majority of the people who have it don't even know they're sick. We should just be happy with it and just say, when you talk about, like yesterday, I must have heard the term second wave 100 times. Brendan, there is no second wave.
No, it's a continuation.
Yeah, it's a continuation. But why do people lie? And why? But these little lies get back and forth. I mean, last night I had a discussion with somebody. I said, what about the 20, 30, 40 million people that have already had it? Why can't they go to a football game? Oh, Chief, you can get it again. Name me one person. Oh, come on, there's been cases. No, I said, there's been cases where people have tested positive a second time with the nose test. If I walk through a bar and where people are misbehaving, when I get to the can, you could swab my nose and there could be a germ in there and I could test positive. Doesn't mean I'm sick. Doesn't mean I even have it. Now, the other tests that have come on since then are a lot better. But I said, name me one person that you've read about, especially males, because they get it worse than the females. Not that women don't get it, they do. Where somebody did lost my sense of taste, smell, had a fever for a few days, went through the whole 10 days, and it's 3 months later, I've got all the antibodies. Name me one case where that person got it again and went through the same thing a second time. There hasn't been one. And yet everybody said, oh man, you can get it a second time. Where? And yet, Brendan, why isn't there a test? This doesn't, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but you should have a sample of 200 people that have had it, right? And in the and just every month, pay these guys to come in, or ladies, monitor their immunity cells. And when they start to go down 2 years from now, and all of a sudden, all those people, if the disease is still here, if it's possible for everybody to get it a second time, they will. We'll know when it happens. It just hasn't happened yet, right? We'll know when it happens. If this thing's still here 3 years from now, and all of a sudden your immunity lasts 3 years, and everybody starts to get it again, we'll know, won't we? Why make it up now?
Well, I think that there should be a change in the approach. However, we've gone so far down the politicized line that it can't be at this point.
But why are we shocked that if it went through Chicago like basically dinner through a goose in March and April. I mean, this thing is incredibly contagious. Incredibly contagious. Mm-hmm. And yet, it seems to have mutated into a form where it could be even more contagious, but it's less viral. And why isn't the piece of paper that landed in here last week that there's like 69,000 students in college that have been tested positive so far this year? Three hospitalizations and not one death. I have not heard that anywhere, Brendan, but that's serious news.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start hearing about, oh God, a sophomore in Tennessee, Ipsy State got the COVID, who cares? He's not even sick, and in a week from now he's going to be fine and immune. Plus, why have we done, we've had zero, there's people here in the office, not from PTI, but people that have been in the office that have had it, that have the antibodies. Why do they have to wear a mask? Why can't they go to a football game? They're not immune. And why is it that we have this incredible, I don't know if you saw the stat last week, they think 19% of the people in Chicago area have the antibodies. That's how hard it went through here in March and April and May, which I think all of us knew. But why aren't every one of those people given the antibodies, and why aren't we rushing those antibodies, the plasma, to every nursing home and every old person in town? We don't want a cure if it doesn't come from the big guys for bazillions of dollars that we're all going to pay for. If somebody came out tomorrow and said, if you and I and Maddie, all of a sudden the big guy upstairs appeared to us in the office, even though you're not in the office, and said, hey, you idiots, take two aspirin and a glass of grapefruit juice, and it'll kill this thing. We couldn't sell that.
So, Chief, it sounds to me like you're a proponent of herd immunity. Let everybody get sick and let the chips fall where they may.
I didn't
have enough immunity.
What I'm saying is,
matter.
I don't think we have a choice. I think that's the way it was in the beginning. The first study I read, Brendan, was they charted this Korean kid, he was 25 years old. Somehow they figured out the day he got infected. And every day they plunked the kid down in this hospital. Every day they kept jabbing him, temperature, you name it. They took every test on the name of the kid. The kid is, 3 days into it, his infection ability, is that a word? His ability to give this infection to somebody else is something like 1,000 times SARS. That's how infectious it is. The minute he gets something wrong with him, symptom. The minute you get a symptom, the second you start running a temperature, that your ability to infect other people drops like a stone. So when you don't know you have it, you're incredibly infectious. As soon as you start to get a temperature or you lose your sense of taste or something, your infection ability drops dramatically. So what do we do here as the dumbest country on earth? We start taking people's temperatures. You need to take the people's temperatures 2 days before, not the day they have it, because you probably can't even infect anybody that day. I'm reading it, and whatever was said in this study, we've done exactly the opposite. So, and the kid said, I would have played basketball any day if my buddies would have called. I never even knew I was sick. The highest he got was 99.2 on a temperature gauge. So if you're taking him every day, you spot it. He said, I've had colds way worse than this. Not even close. Now, he was a fortunate one. Some people got it worse. Obviously, the older you get. So, Brendan, everything that was said in that study is exactly correct. If somebody from Chicago wanders into Rockford, where it's never been, all of a sudden, Rockford's going to go through the same thing Chicago did, or Centralia, or Decatur. Why is this a shock to people? So if all of a sudden Decatur has an outbreak when they didn't have it before, why is that a second wave? It's Decatur's first wave, isn't it?
Well, I don't think this is a second wave or a third wave. I think it's still a continuation of what happened in the springtime when it first started hitting into the summer. So that's number one point. But I'm also curious that you're picking up on this one study of the Korean, but yet having a small sample size doesn't seem to work on the other side for you.
What do you mean?
And I think that's one of the problems.
No, what I'm saying is I think it was so infectious, it's like the common cold. It's worse than the common cold in terms of getting it. That's my point. I'm not trying to downplay it. I'm trying to upplay it. I'm saying the thing is that contagious.
I've heard that line before.
Yeah.
Very recently I heard that line.
No, but my point is it... I mean, we would love to stop the flu at the border every winter. We can't, mm-hmm. Brendan. We can't. We don't even attempt to try.
Bob writes in on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter, at Stocks the Letter N Jocks. He says, Chief, hospitalizations are not down in hotspots. ICUs are full, and some areas are sending patients to hospitals in other states.
Wisconsin is one of those examples where their hospitalization rate is climbing and the death rate may be climbing a little bit behind them. because of the lag period. But yes, there are some states. Wisconsin is one. I think both North and South Dakota are one where hospitalizations are increasing again, Chief.
I didn't say they weren't. What I said was the other stuff I've read is, okay, and I'm a kind of clearinghouse for this, and I read all this stuff. If you're under the age of 5, it's 1/8 as deadly as the flu. Between 5 and 10, it's like 1/4 as deadly. Teenage years, it's about even. When you get to over 75, it's 30 times worse than the flu. So, yeah, if it gets to a place, and the people who are compromised are going to have a problem with it. I didn't say they didn't. They weren't. What I said was people at college at that age, when you read about 5,000 kids at the University of Auburn out in the middle of nowhere getting this thing, we should rejoice. There's 5,000 people that are going to be over it. It's not the other way, Brennan. I mean, it just isn't. It's not containable. It hasn't been, and it won't be. And the idea that they're wearing masks, then you get a load of this out of the guy who likes the law. The gentleman from American Airlines last week was on telling people how safe it was to be on an airplane, basically butthole to elbow, with every seat taken because how fantastic the ventilation system is. Anybody who believes you're safer on a plane, which have been petri dishes forever, than you are in an open stadium 5 feet away from somebody is out of his friggin' mind, Brendan. Anybody who believes that story, I got a bridge for you, for God's sake. Am I wrong?
I am shocked at that news story, too. I did read that where they said that it's safer on an airplane than it is in open stadiums, and I find that hard to believe. I've read about all the filters, the HEPA filters, the flow on the airplane, but it doesn't make sense to me.
How many people do you
know?
The
only times I've ever gotten sick in my life are from an airplane.
That's what I'm saying. Anybody? I have buddies who used to fly overseas, and sometimes they'd make it to Japan and wouldn't even go to the meetings. They'd be so sick in a hotel room for 4 days and come back.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Brendan, thank you very much. We might have to have you back this week, or you know, there's a. I want to talk more about these mortgages and how these places that are going under, and how that all works through. And whether or not the state can do anything about it on taxation and stuff. And you'd probably be my man. So we might have you back maybe when Luzon or something this week. So be ready, bud.
All right. Give me a call if you need me.
SP Futures up 24, NASDAQ Futures up 78. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice.
PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Melwerp on the board. Should have Mr. Joel and Cannon here shortly. S&P futures up 23.75, NASDAQ futures up 79, which is right where we were yesterday. May sounds like deja vu all over again, Yogi. What do you think? S&P futures are down, futures up 199. However, the day didn't end that way yesterday, but we'll get that in a second. DAX down 29.2%, FTSE up 16.3%, CAC run up 33.7%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 104, that's 0.4%, Shanghai up 15.5%, Hang Seng up 27.1%, almost flat there. Review of yesterday, like I said, during the show, we were very bullish because we were up like we are now. However, the Dow Jones, after being down 450, closed down 410. That's 1.5%. Ouch. S&P 500 down 56. That's 1.6%. NASDAQ down 192, 1.6%. So yesterday was an amazing turnaround day. And now we're trying to bounce back a little bit because after the close, or right about the close, the Nancy Munchkin show came out and said, oh, we're still talking. So then we immediately went up 15, 20 points on that, and we're still there, right? I don't know. This is interesting to see, Maddie, whatever you think this, how this is going to end, this stimulus deal. But if it ends with a clunk, I don't know. I don't think the market's going to like it. Bonds, 0.78 up 2 basis points. Bund, minus 0.62. 10-year Japan yield, same spot, positive 0.02. It's been there now for how many days in a row? Oil up 15 cents, 40.98, almost, well, pushing 41. Brent down 4 cents, 42.58. Natural gas up 9 cents. Must be this cold snap, man. You guys couldn't play softball because of the cold. It's causing people to turn their heat on, I think.
It rains every Monday, too.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that affects the gas as much as the cold. 2.98.
It affects my softball.
Yes. RBOB, $1.17, unchanged. We got gold down 370, but still 1908. Silver unchanged at 24.70. They were both up pretty good yesterday. Copper up 3 cents, 312. We haven't seen it up that high in quite a while. Interesting. It's continuing to move up. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We had an earlier crash on the outbound Ryan just before Roosevelt Road. That's causing some delays. That crash has been cleared, but it's about 20 minutes now from downtown to 95th Street on the outbound Ryan due to that earlier crash. No issues on the inbound side. I-57 and the Bishop Port are all quiet, as are the Stevenson and Eisenhower, it looks like, so that's good news. We do have an issue just off the Eisenhower. Costner Avenue on the west side between Adams and Wilcox Street is closed due to a crash. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive looking good, as are the suburban tollways. Everything else quiet out there. Weather today, more clouds. It will be a bit warmer than yesterday. We'll reach a high of 55. Should be dry, too, but cloudy all day. Right now it's overcast and 44 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, no clouds down there. Sunshine with a high of 97. Right now it's clear and 65. In sports, Arizona Cardinals are now 4-2. They went into Dallas last night and took it to the Cowboys, beating Andy Dalton and the boys 38-10 down in Dallas. The earlier Monday Night Football game was a good one in Buffalo. It was closer than the final score, but the Chiefs pulled away late to beat Buffalo 26-17. And finally, the World Series begins tonight. The two best teams record-wise in the regular season will meet up. Game one tonight between Tampa Bay and the LA Dodgers at 7:09 p.m. Central Time, first pitch. It'll be Glasnow versus Kershaw. Chief.
I got a new way to watch this now. I'm gonna take a nap at 7, set the alarm for 11. I can watch the last four innings.
It's not a bad way to do it.
I mean, this is insane. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. Good morning, Matty Ice. Here we are. When is the last time that we had an extended sports discussion?
We were hoping for today. It's been a while. By the way, did you see the your buddies, the Saints, are trying to move to Baton Rouge so they can put people in the stands?
When did they become my Saints? Did you know that I used to love to say, "Who that? Who that beat those Saints?" Remember that? Maddie, you were probably like in junior high school when that happened.
I was young, but I do remember that, and that was great.
Well, who
they started out 7-0, and then they started that chant. I think they lost like their next six games or something. I guess I kind of have mixed emotions here about the Michigan game on Saturday. I'm glad that they're playing. I'm glad to get to watch some football. Just the circumstances behind everything kind of take a little bit of the luster off it. I don't see how the odds makers have us at a 2.5, 3-point favorite, to be honest with you.
Well, is Minnesota any good? How do you know? Were they that good last year?
Minnesota was decent last year. They were up and comer off P.J. Fleck. And I know they won receiver. Is not coming back. But Michigan lost a ton of people to the draft. They lost 4 people on the offensive line to the pros. They lost a couple defensive players. Quarterback. We got new. Here's the bright spot. And this is what I'll tell you what I'm looking for in Michigan football, not only this game, but for the season. They're starting Joe Milton at quarterback. He's 6'5", 245. Could supposedly throw the ball 75 yards on a dime. But I don't think that's going to be our game. We lost a lot of wide receivers to transfer in the NFL, so we're left with these little runs, basically, that are fast and run around. So what I think they're going to do is they're going to load up the line. We got 3 good tailbacks. Chris Evans is back. He had to sit out a year we really don't know the reason. Zach Charbonnet, also Hassan Haskins. I think you're going to see Milton rolling out a little bit. I don't think we're going to go to the option or, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, but I think you're going to see some halfback screens, some tight end screens, and just try and get this Joe Milton in. He could be great, but, this is really his first time in the spotlight.
Joe, what's
defense the... Defense should be okay. We have one of the two top defensive linemen, and Aiden Hutchinson and also Quiddy Pay. Those guys are both going to be playing on Sunday. Have some leaks in the defensive secondary, but that's nothing new to Michigan football. I like the kicking game. I don't know. Some people are saying 4-4. Other people are saying 7-1 with the only loss to Ohio State. I think we're going to be somewhere in between there. Besides that, I haven't been following it too much.
All right, so you're playing all Big Ten schedule. And they're playing 8 games. So when does that end? End of December?
Yeah, we play Ohio State, I think, December 19th. Can you believe that? You're in the midst of bowl season.
So when's the playoff?
Or getting started with bowl season. But, hey, let's hope we get to that point. The NFL's having some problems, keeping the players healthy. College is a lot different. You have young kids. Who knows what their social distancing, practices are or what they're doing. So let's get there. It would be my hope at this time.
Slight correction: the Ohio State game's on December 12th, and then but of the 8 game schedule, Michigan has probably the toughest in the Big Ten because they play all 4 of the ranked teams. Besides themselves, obviously, there's 5 ranked teams in the conference preseason, and Michigan has to play all 4 of them at Minnesota, at Ohio State, like you mentioned, and then they host Penn State and host Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, those are going to be 4 tough ball games starting out on the road too. I mean, I don't know, we'll see. I mean, this is Harbaugh's 6th year. Obviously, he hasn't met the expectations that people had for him. He really hasn't developed a quarterback. Jake Rudock was okay. He stuck with Shea Patterson way too long. Dylan McCaffrey ended up transferring. So, I mean, the people that get down and say, hey, he's been a disappointment, I think at this point we haven't sniffed a Big Ten championship game. And we had one shot, I believe, in 16 to get to the playoffs, and we had that famous spot in the non-holding call in the Ohio State game. But,
bygones are bygones. You got to move forward.
Well, what's the guys out on the West Coast? They're starting even later, right? Are they going to play games as well?
The Pac-10? Now that you have that, I'm following Michigan, and I just, like, on the national scene, I just have, you know, I know Alabama stacked again. You know, they whooped up on Georgia. You know, Alabama, Clemson, you know, the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, maybe the Lions will get them, but haven't been keeping an eye on the national picture that much.
Yeah, Pac-12 is scheduled to start on November 7th.
And how many games?
And they're going to play a six-game schedule. So every team has to wrap up their regular season by December 12th, and then you get to play a conference championship game on December 19th, and then they're going to allow the conference champions, you know, to be eligible for a playoff.
Even if you... So you knew the Pac-10s, and they're going to expect to be in the conference championship too, right?
That's right. So their conference champion, you know, including the championship game, will have played seven games. The Big Ten will have played nine games, while the SEC, you know, at least on paper, will play a full season.
And so, what about the Irish? Are playing what, one game less? They're going to play 11 or something?
I think that's right. Yeah.
What's the story on fans? Nobody.
No. Michigan told me they don't want my money. They don't want, actually, they kept my money, and I could have got it back. Or they gave me the option of donating to the university. I've done enough of that.
Yeah, so, that's enough of that.
I'm holding the ticket. I mean, I'm holding them for next year. But boy, oh boy, the home field advantage now is, I think, is decidedly different. I think you're seeing that in the NFL now, without the fans. I'm not sure what the policy, in the South, you know, they're bringing them in there, and I saw some of the games are pretty packed, but, no fans, and that's certainly going to be, it's going to be different here, 2020.
A very
unusual year, I think is the best way to put it.
Why are you doing that? I mean, the Irish are having students and they've had 10,000-15,000. It still looks like there's nobody there. I mean, I guess if Michigan let the students in, that would be 40,000 people, all right?
Yeah, and who's governor of Indiana?
I don't know, but I mean...
I think we have a little bit of different restrictions from coming down from the government than you guys in Indiana does.
So does that mean, so Eric Holcomb's the governor of Indiana, does that mean that Indiana and Purdue are going to have fans, but no one else in Nebraska will probably have fans, and maybe no other school will?
You know how I don't like to talk politics, guys.
Well, I'm saying, but the question is it a Big Ten commissioner decree or is it a state decree?
No, it's a state decree. Absolutely, a state. Just like the NFL,
yes,
just like everybody else.
Maddie's got it right.
So I'll bet Indiana and Purdue will have fans.
I think they probably will too, which is interesting. Unless, or at least they'll be eligible to have fans, and then maybe the student president or not the student president, the university president will veto it.
Well, I mean, at the very least. Again, I don't want to get back to our other discussion, but anybody who's already had it should be able to go, you would think. Anyway, Joel, thank you very much. Good luck to you guys.
We'll see what happens.
Yep.
I don't like Michigan should be getting a touchdown instead of giving 2.5. We'll see how that turns out.
So now I know how you're betting. SP Futures up 20, NASDAQ Futures up 66. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome up, Big Slash Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Just about wearing the board. SP futures up 21. NASDAQ futures up 68. They were up a little more. Of course, we were up more than this yesterday morning and ended up with a clunk of a day. We have Mr. Kenny Pulcherry with us. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. Are you sitting down? I got to read something here for you guys.
I am sitting. Go ahead and read.
Biden's tax plan could create a tax rate of as much as 62% for New Yorkers and Californians and people who have fled to Florida. Studies show.
Yeah. Did you see that? They did that on Robert Frank on CNBC did a whole article about that yesterday. And
I'm reading his article.
You're reading the article. I put it in my note this morning as well. But then the Wall Street Journal comes out and said that, you know, that only it's only going to affect 1.8% of the population, and everyone earning under $400,000 is going to pay less taxes. And I'm not so sure I completely agree with that, but the fact is, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are not talking about it. They're not defining it. They're not explaining it. All they want to do is talk about COVID to try to divert the attention.
Well, you know what? Trump said everybody got a tax cut, too, and that was bull.
Yeah, you're right, because I ended up paying more in taxes because I lived in New York at the time, and we lost those SALT deductions.
Yeah. I mean, it's I don't think that I'm going to kind of go through this, Kenny. First of all, if somebody makes $400,000 a year as a consultant, he's going to pay 60. He or she is going to pay 60 right out of the gate in payroll tax.
Yeah,
he's going to pay 15% there. And if they're talking about income tax rates of more than 60, and it doesn't include the payroll tax, correct? It clearly doesn't.
I think in Robert Frank's analysis, I thought it was all in at 62.6%, which included payroll. I have to go back and look at the article. Are you reading it right now?
Yes.
I thought it included it.
It says, taxpayers earning more than $400,000 a year could face combined state and local statutory income tax rates of more than 60%. So that that does not include the other.
Not
so, so my question to you is, there used to be when you were young, I don't know if you knew it or not. Well, you knew when you were young. I think you knew. There used to be a guy or a study, you know, could have been whoever did the study, could have been female, where every year they used to analyze how far into the year you had to work to pay off your taxes. And it was like
mid-April, and then it was mid-May.
Yeah. So now we're talking, if you put the payroll taxes onto this, which is another 15%. We could be talking September.
But correct me if I'm wrong. The payroll taxes 50% of that is paid by the employer and 50% by the employee. So
what
15% is really 7%.
No, what I said.
Not that that makes a difference, right?
What I said is nobody wants an employee anymore, right? Everybody's a consultant.
Correct. Right.
So if you're a contract worker, it's 15% off the top.
Yeah, right.
I happen to know that, unfortunately. And I'm not happy about it, to be blunt. But, no, it's 15% off. I mean, literally, Kenny, if you... And everybody is all over everybody at 1099, everybody. If you got some guy, or lady, who, I don't want to be sexist here, but if you have someone cutting your grass or somebody cleaning your home, and you pay them $1,000 last year, and you send them a 1099, even if it's the only thing they make, the government's going to be after them for $150.
Yeah.
And clearly wants it. Even if your tax return, I made $1,000, you would think you don't pay any taxes. That would be wrong, though. They want 150, which is right. Incredible if you ask me. But
Kevin writes in and says, when 2/3 of tax filers don't itemize, doubling the personal exemption is a tax cut for them.
Yeah. Well, but
doubling the right.
Well, but did the you know? I guess it could be, but a lot of the stuff you'd be a lot of things you can't take off anymore, or you know, people used to take off. I mean, you buy a car, you can't even take off the $6,000 you pay in taxes, for God's sake. That's all.
Right.
That's a chunk.
I mean, yeah, that is a big chunk for a lot of people.
Well, I mean, you know, Kenny's never bought a car less than 100G, so that's $7,000 right there. He was first in line to pay $100,000 for the
new, with you.
He's the first in line to pay $100,000 for the new Jeep.
Yeah.
When did you ever think a Jeep was going to be $100,000?
I've been a Ford client my whole life. Ford Explorers and then Ford Expeditions when my kids were little, and then I went back to the Explorer when my kids got big.
Did you ever have the O.J. Simpson Bronco?
No. No.
Did you ever have one of the old little Broncos that are worth an absolute fortune? Now I'd die for one of those things.
I know that. Is that unbelievable, the Broncos? I never did. No, yeah. I never did.
That's why I like watching the, what was the movie, Robert Redford, 3 Days of the Condor, because what's-her-name drove one of those things. Anyway,
it's really unbelievable how much those old Ford Broncos are in demand.
Oh, yeah.
It's scary, right?
Oh, yeah. All right, Kenny, we've got the market looking good yesterday morning. Everybody's kind of feeling all right about the market. We had yesterday's turnaround was incredible, 700 and some points, and nobody even has an outpeep about it today. And all of a sudden, you know, oh, yeah, we're just talking about the stimulus. 700 and some points from top to bottom, that's a day, Kenny.
Right. But it was. That's right. But I tell you something. I'm not necessarily surprised because the VIX futures continue to point to elevated volatility going into December. You needed one little headline to knock the market off, which is what you got yesterday. On top of the no stimulus thing or the possible no stimulus thing, then you had all kinds of reports about the slowing economy and virus cases surging in the United States and across Europe, and shutdowns and lockdowns and slowdowns and all that stuff. And so, once the negative headlines start to accumulate, they just pile on and pile on, and then it's all about accentuating the negative, which is exactly what happened yesterday. And now this morning, Nancy Pelosi goes, okay, well, you know, I had a conversation with him last night after the bell that news comes out. Maybe we're going to talk today. I'm kind of tired of this back and forth. We're going to talk. We're not going to talk. We're on. We're off. We have a deal. We don't have a deal.
Well,
but that's what's happening today. Now they have a deal in the market. What, the futures up 200 points at the moment?
Well, I don't know if they got a real deal, but first of all, would you be tired of it if you were getting the information and what they were saying and when they were coming out with the outpeeps?
No, if I was getting the information before they said it, I wouldn't be tired of it at all.
No, you just,
that's why I'm curious who is getting that information.
You'd be
people
like,
making a lot of money off the swings.
You'd be like the kid in Animal House. This is great. Well, I have a very serious question for you, Kenny, because we're kidding around here. You mentioned the VIX, I'm going to say the implied volatilities, going up dramatically from October 30th to November 6th.
Yep.
Which,
yep.
My question to you is, why aren't they coming down? If you go out to January, February, March, they're still up.
Well, because I think there is a sense now. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I think there was the sense it wasn't going to be a contested election and Joe was going to win and blah, blah, blah. Now I think it's elevated again and that it's closer than what the polls are telling us, and so therefore there's a sense that there's going to be a contested election. And look what happened yesterday. The Supreme Court came back and said that Pennsylvania is allowed to count mail-in ballots 3 days after the election. As long as they're postmarked by the 3rd, they have until the 6th to count them, and you know that's going to cause an issue. You know it's going to be contestable, and so I think the market's preparing itself for a contested outcome, and that we may go, you know, until the end of December for without really knowing who's in charge.
I'm with you on that, and I agree with you 100%, which you're not supposed to do on radio. But why is it still up in March? I mean, I just thought by January it'd start to come down. It really isn't.
Yeah, I would think. Well, I just think I'm not really sure I can explain why it's going out so much, unless people just assume that, you know, Biden does become the president, and then there's going to be all kinds of re-regulation and taxes are going to be very different from what they say they're going to be, and so there's some underlying nervousness about what the policy is going to be, and so therefore the market will reprice itself, right? And so I think the VIX is telling you it's a little bit unsure still.
Well, my issue is obviously with Trump, but I sure have my issues with Joe and Kamala. The idea that people have enough money that you can tax your way out of this is so stone cold and ignorant, I can't even go there.
Yeah, that's not happening. They're going to inflate their way out of it. That's what's going to happen. Inflation's going to soar, and that's how they're going to get out of it.
Well, but as soon as they do, they're not going to be able to get too far without the Federal Reserve going the other way, and all of a sudden they're going to have to start paying 8% and 9% and 10% on their long-term rates, just like they did before.
Right, exactly right. And then you'll see, you know, there'll be a correction in housing, because when mortgage rates, like you and I know, back in 1980, when mortgage rates were 19%, my first mortgage on my house in Tarrytown was 14.5% in 1983.
And it was the best deal you ever made, because from then, the rates went straight down, and the housing prices went straight up.
And my house went straight up, yep.
The best deal you ever made. And yet, if you listen to everybody, I'm not going to cast any aspersions on my significant other who's in real estate. Everybody says the best time to buy a house is when rates are low. Kenny, that is absolutely not the truth. It's the exact opposite.
That is not the truth. Of course not. Because once rates start to go up, those housing prices are coming down.
Right. It's the other way around. If you can afford to buy your shack and pay 15%, thank God. Because you just give yourself a year or two and you're on Fat City, right?
Agreed.
Well, unfortunately, Kenny, we can't change everybody's mind. Just a couple old guys talking. But you take care of yourself, bud. And I'll try to make sure these guys don't chase you down to Florida for your income taxes.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. See you. SP Futures up 19. NASDAQ Futures up 45. Come back with Mr. Mike Hart. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye!
The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Weber. Also, Mr. Mike Hart from Tasty Trade. SP Futures now only up 19, only. I'm saying this because yesterday we were up this much and we managed to lose it. But hopefully we will not today. SP Futures, like I said, up 19. NASDAQ Futures only up 40 now. They're up over 100 when we walked in. Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing fantastic, Chief. How's it going today?
All right. I understand that the second you left the show, you bought 500 puts and went and had coffee and came back at 3 o'clock and sold them.
Yeah, that's you know, typically my game plan. You know, I just go put a shot on and see what happens.
Well, you come back and just yes, you're winning, sir.
Nothing to it. I mean, it can be that simple. Exactly.
I understand that Jeff read this article about the Biden tax thing, and he's off looking for homes on the Isle of Man, Bermuda, and in wherever Grace Kelly was, Monaco.
Well, that does sound like Jeff. I mean, if anyone was going to go someplace exotic, I would give it to Jeff for that, for sure.
Well, exotic now means no taxes. They don't care.
Absolutely.
What
exotic. Yeah, if you can find that, that's even better.
Yeah. Could you actually live in that? Remember, Maddie, we had somebody on a while ago was talking about the tax-free zone in Ireland. That was just a spot for people to have businesses. You couldn't go live there, could you? I don't think.
Yeah, I think it was a tax haven for businesses. I don't know about personal.
So you couldn't live there and just walk out of the tax free zone to go to the pub and then come back in. Just saying. So Mike, we've got what did yesterday tell you in terms of the vol and stuff? Clearly, I mean, we still are sort of in the same range, but it's, you know, do you believe that we had a 700 point down move and barely bringing up the subject today? I mean, that's how crazy this has become.
It really has. You know, I think volatility, it's really worked into this market for some of these longer-term uncertainties. And right now, the market's acting, and it's an interesting time to be talking about this, because we're in the heart of earnings seasons right now. And the market, in a sense, has a type of earning coming up. And I'm actually going to use a phrase that I use to describe earnings and to describe what we have coming up, which is called a binary event. And earnings are a binary event in the sense that it's going to be one way or the other, right? I mean, the earnings number comes out and it's either positive, negative, whatever it is. I mean, the market's going to react, and it's binary in the sense that it's one way or the other. And I think that's the same thing that's going on with this presidential election. You have a binary event where the market has priced in a lot of volatility for this event, but day to day we're not seeing much taken out or much putting in right now. It's sort of a wait and see, and if any of the major components change, then we'd probably see more of a volatility story. But right now we're comfortably sitting between 25 and 30 in the VIX. Haven't really been above there. Like I said, we have earnings this week. It has the potential to shake things up, but the market seems detached from a lot of the individual stock stories that are going on, and it seems to be really focused on this one event coming up in November for the election. So I really think we have two types of binary events on the horizon, and the first being what we need to get through, which is earnings. And that's going on with all of our stocks right now, all of the liquid underlyings that we trade. Of course, we have earnings four times a year. This is an interesting earnings cycle, I think, because you have the backdrop of high implied volatility going on in the rest of the market. Usually we say, you know, earnings operate in their own little bubble or their own little world, and, you know, they're not affected by the market as much. But this is a unique time where you have really high implied volatility, and maybe some of the uncertainty in the market gets spilled over into earnings. We just have to wait and see how things shake up.
Well, the tout, for lack of a better term, how's that for a racetrack term? The tout has been, and I had listened to two gentlemen yesterday talk about how the earnings have been spectacular. Now 85% of the firms have beat, and it's this is the great, you know, one of the best earnings year we've had, blah blah. And then one of my listeners, of course, does a little research, which you're never supposed to do, Mike, and wings me this note yesterday and says, guess what? Last year, corporate earnings, I don't know how far down he went, S&P 500 or someplace, were in the $520 billion, and this year they're $420. Okay, I don't care about all the expectators. If they're 20% lower, they're 20% lower. How could they be that good? And if you did another, only you and I would be sneaky enough, Jeff, too. I'm going to say if you bifurcated, how's that for a term? If you bifurcated those earnings and put the companies to one side that had their nose up the behind a government versus those that didn't, you'd see another massive bifurcation. That, you know, the drug companies that all got billions of dollars from the government and other people, they're doing fine, right? Amazon's doing fine. But all the other people aren't, I don't think. So I don't know how you can, don't pee on my shoes and tell me it's raining, for God's sake. I mean, this earnings season, it hasn't been that good. I mean, Goldman Sachs was fine because they're playing with the government's money every day. And Morgan Stanley, but everybody else isn't. Or are they? Or am I just missing it?
No, I think you're hitting on something. And I'm not going to use the word manipulated because that, of course, isn't what the right word. But it does have a feeling of, the chips are already in, and the horse has already been picked, and sort of the outcome is expected. But you have to say, if that is the case, then we would expect to see the market has already priced this in. And we're not seeing that right now. We're not seeing the market pricing in things like, and I'm going to, we talk about Tesla all the time, so I have my platform open, so I'm just going to give some color around what's going on in Tesla. So today is Tuesday, October 20th. Tomorrow is October 21st. That is earnings day. So we have earnings coming out on the 21st. If we were going to trade earnings, we really only have one cycle that we can go to here, which is the November 20th monthly cycle. It's the only one I have on my screen. There might be weeklies that you can trade, but I don't typically have the weeklies even displayed because there isn't enough liquidity for me to trade the weeklies.
There is. The first couple of weeks, I've got the straddle for this Friday at $41. So that's
okay.
That's where
we're talking about. How far is the bid ask on that? I mean, is it decent bid?
You can ask. Yeah, 30 cents. I mean, you could try. Tesla's pretty liquid.
Okay, so well, I don't have that. I don't have that pulled up. But if you wanted to, here's how my mechanics work around trading earnings. You could trade that cycle. You could trade the nearest to expiration cycle. I'm only going to do that for an earnings trade. A typical trade that I do in the options world at minimum is going to have 45 days until expiration. And this is because I like to use the component of time as part of the factor in my equation. So I like having, if I'm short an option, I like to get paid for time via theta. But theta doesn't really play a spot in earnings. In earnings, we're looking for a pure volatility play. And it's also, you may have heard the term a volatility crush.
Yes.
I don't know if that's been thrown around, but that's specifically an earnings terminology, which is volatility crush. And what happens is prior to earnings, you get volatility gets pumped into the system exceptionally hard, and you get weekly cycles with huge expected moves. And, and that actually, that's going to extend out to even like the monthly November cycle. If we're trading at 430 now, on the downside, we have, we have given plus or minus a $75-$80 move for the expected move, for earnings. And you're going to see that just as much in the front month. So, what we might do is we say, we think volatility is, pumped up quite a bit here. We're going to take the other side of this. We're going to anticipate that volatility crush, and we're going to sell volatility. You can do that in a couple ways. For Tesla, it's an expensive stock. I wouldn't go naked, meaning I wouldn't sell a call, sell a put, and say I got a strangle on. You're opening yourself to a lot of risk that way. Not saying you wouldn't. My account doesn't have the stamina to hold that. So what I would do is I'd create a short iron condor and try and capture that volatility, if that were your game. Some people have another game going on where they might be saying, you know, I'm really bullish this earnings cycle because I think, you know, Tesla, you know, they come out with earnings. Earnings are usually whatever they are, but Tesla does well, so I want to get long. You got a different game going on completely. But if your assumption is a volatility crush, typically you're looking to sell premium.
Well, it's interesting, Mike, because I'll let you know, it's kind of an interesting story about one of the strategies that I have used in the past and how they've changed recently. Because, like, you and I always talk about how when you trade options, a lot of times the prices dictate the strategy, right? I mean, if this straddle I just said was, it's, say, $41. Well, I'm going to say if it was $200, even if we could find a way to do a one lot, we'd probably sell it, right? If it was $2, we'd find the money to buy it. But,
right.
But what I would like to do, or what I always have done, is I look at the straddle as like the key for the earnings. It's essentially the market's best bet or the market's judgment over how much the thing is going to move one way or the other on earnings, right? Now, sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. But what I would like to do, what I used to do, is I actually had a better system. I have a pretty good system now from IB, but I don't know of a system now that allows you to hold the market steady while you change the volatilities and look and essentially test it. I used to have that with Trek Data, and now they went out of business. But anyway, what I would try and do, I would look at the time spread. I would say, okay, now the 430s, this week, next week, say they're trading, that spread is trading $4. And I would say, all right, next week the volatility is going to drop from, you know, 80 down to, after the earnings come out, and it's no longer a binary event, it's going to drop to the normal Tesla volatility, which is, I don't know, pick a number, 40. So I dropped the spread down to 40, and if I could test my spread to a bigger move than the straddle, I would think it was a good buy. Well, since then, I've had to kind of have more of a half-assed way of looking at it, where if I can buy the straddle, buy the time spread for, I'd say, less than or more than one-tenth. If the straddle's $40, if I can buy the time spread for less, for like $3, $2, to where it's like 15, 20 to 1, I would do it. Okay, but now, with the thing with the election and all the other stuff, the COVID, the straddle can be $10, the time spread's $2. Because the volatility next week isn't going down it goes down a little, but it's not going down after the earnings. Instead of IBM being, you know, 30 on earnings day and then you expect it to be 17 the next day, it's 30 on earnings day and it's going to go down to 27 or something. But I can't bring myself, Mike, to pay $6 for a spread that I used to pay $2 for. It's just not in the DNA. You know, even though I know the reasons for it, I just can't go there. I mean,
Right. We'd expect sort of a revision to the mean. Well, if the mean's really high, you know, that revision that we're going to see as far as what we're going to get paid on volatility. And that's important to note. When you're trying to capture volatility, you really need a couple things to work out for you. And if you're short volatility, you're short, known as Vega, we want volatility to contract. We're going to get paid for volatility to contract. Now, what's going to make volatility definitely contract is non-movement. Non-movement is essential. If we're selling volatility, we need the thing to sit where it is or stay within that expected move. When you add movement, which is totally possible, you add movement, you don't get, you might get that volatility drop. Actually, you know, it's a binary event, so when the thing comes out, the unknown is now known, and when the unknown is known, there's less uncertainty about the unknown. So volatility itself is going to drop, but you might get killed on the price move. The price action actually might overwhelm whatever you got paid. So that's, you know, one of those risks. And the other risk, as you're mentioning, is, hey, you know, the volatility that we're expecting to get paid on isn't actually all that great because the reversion to the expected mean here is actually pretty close to where it is right now. You know, typically we see 4X, meaning four times the volatility priced into one of these events.
Right.
Well, if you have the market already trading at 2X, where it normally is, and you have the usual 4X being priced in, well, maybe you're only now like 2X above as opposed to 4X above. So the cost of doing business changes, and you got to put that into your equation before you decide, hey, I'm going to go out here and blindly start selling premium in all these
earnings announcements. Well, I mean, what? Just I had in doing these spreads, you know, they come and they go. All right, I kind of like them because anytime you can do something real cheap and just kind of hang on to the straight long put and long call, you know, there's a time that something you can actually. You know, you can get the black swan movement, and you can actually, you know, make a lot of money on something. But I would say, Mike, from the years 2013 through 15, these things were stone cold losers. No matter how, if I did an IBM spread, and I'd say, okay, it's trading at 35 before the earnings, it's going to go down to 16. I mean, we went through that period where we never moved in the market. As low as I could estimate it in my 40 years of doing this. It would come out after earnings, and it'd be like 12 or 10. It would just be go to a spot after the earnings and not move for a month. You couldn't estimate the thing low enough. So I would lose the ones that moved, right? And the ones I won, instead of, you know, making 150% on a big winner, I'm making 30%. And so for two or three years, this stuff just absolutely did not work. And all of a sudden, last few years, Trump's been in, they've a lot of them have worked, you know, more than have not worked. Okay, so
yeah.
But I mean, for a period of time, they were the part that went over the fence last, for God's sake. But now today, this is like I'm saying about this Tesla, the straddle's $40. Now if I go out the next week and buy the time spread, I got to pay six. So that's, you know, whatever, it's seven times, right? Six and a half times. There were times when that spread where I could pay two and a half for it. So I just am not into paying six for the damn thing. It may turn out to be a great buy, but I just can't do that. I mean, you know, for God's sake, I do a 20 lot for somebody. What is it? 12 grand? I don't want to bet that on a time spread. I mean, you know, that's crazy. It's just,
right.
So I mean, there's all kinds of bad stuff can happen when you start paying $6 for something. And yet I understand why it's high, because it's not like the volatility in Tesla next week is going to be 15. It's not going to. It's going to be probably almost as high after the earnings as before, right? Because all of a sudden, Munchkin or somebody's going to come out with a statement, and it doesn't matter. It's going to move Tesla more than Tesla will move Tesla, I think, you know.
Right, and that's just it. It's like we're sitting on all these binary events coming up this week, but we've got the major binary event of the election, which there's no question at this point the way I hate saying anything with certainties when I'm talking statistics. And I'm certainly not saying this with certainty, but all of the signs are pointing towards the fact that all of the risk in this market right now is being priced around this election. It's been there for a while, and it hasn't really moved. It's only increased. So, you know, we can probably rest comfortably assured that for the next few weeks, until we get to this election, until we get it under our belt and we get the news announced and we get that volatility crush, these markets are going to stay inflated with volatility. And the expectation that we're going to have a home run in any of these earnings, you brought up an interesting point that I hadn't really thought about going into this, but I think it makes it a lot more difficult given the environment of, or the bigger picture of the election, and just the other factors that are keeping volatility really high at this point.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'll ask Matty Weber for his vote, since he's another one of the guys who wants to vote early and often type of guy. Hey, which election? Is it the president's
election? Well, of course, the presidential election, right?
Is it the president's election or the Senate?
I would 100% say it's the presidential election. Now, like all of the ramifications, possibilities, it's of course being priced in. But this to me is it's about the big show.
I'm gonna lob one out there, and people please tweet in and tell me I'm nuts if he does that. And by the way, if you tell me I'm nuts in a coherent manner, I might learn from it and figure out I am nuts. I'm going to say that if Trump squeaks in and the Democrats take the Senate, he's totally denutted for 4 years. And if Biden sneaks in, or doesn't sneak in, if he wins and he loses the Senate, that all the stuff he wants to do to change what Trump did, he can't do.
Well, in that scenario, you know, you have to assume volatility might be here for a lot longer. If that's the scenario, if that's the way the game theory is getting played, then it's probably already somewhat priced in. And maybe that's why we're seeing volatility extend all the way out until March. Is there is this expectation that yes, we will get an election announcement, but that is only the beginning of the enigma or the puzzle of where this thing actually ends up.
Well, I could see in this world with the losers we have in charge, and I honestly believe that they can't if they saw the truth they'd run away from it. It wouldn't surprise me in the least that the Republicans jam through this lady from Notre Dame, and they get back in the Senate. Biden wins, and all of a sudden somebody croaks, and they tell Biden, "We're going to wait till the next election to put it through." I wouldn't put it past them at all to go 4 years on that. They just went a year and a half or a year. I mean, they can absolutely gum up the works, and especially if they do. By the way, I have a question. I don't know if it's more of a Lou question. I thought the filibuster was gone, and now they're talking about there's nothing that needs 60 votes now that I see. So how could the filibuster still be there? I was reading last week that if the Democrats take over, they're going to get rid of the filibuster rule. What filibuster? Man, when was the last time you saw a filibuster? It hasn't been 60 votes to do anything in 3 years, has there?
Well, I mean, the filibuster, I guess, is sort of one of those, like, it seems like it's always this thing that they're hanging on to. I've never really seen an effective filibuster that I can remember, and I'm not an expert in this, but my experience is, you know, the idea of the filibuster is always worse than the filibuster itself. But I think as far as, you know, if we take a step back and we say what really matters here, I don't think it's the smaller sort of the nuances of those types of things. I think what really matters here is ultimately, you know, who's going to be in the big seat, who's going to be the president.
I don't disagree, but I'm saying let's not think that a Biden sitting there with Trump hasn't been able to do squat because he's got a Democratic House. Why would Biden with a Republican Senate be any better? Or more capable?
It wouldn't. I don't think, you know, and I don't think it would be more capable. I don't think anything would actually really change beyond. To me, it's all about where assets are being allocated. So you see the change in the market around asset allocation based on policy. But that would be the change that I'd expect to see. As far as getting stuff done, I think Washington's been locked up and going to remain locked up for some time to come.
The only people that get the money, they spread a little bit to every man this time, which is interesting because they don't normally do that. But 80% of the money still went to the regular people, the regular guys. And I was reading something the other day, and I almost had to put it down because, like, you know, I almost wanted to reach for a barf bag, but about how many big companies and how many individuals have done nothing but make money during this pandemic versus other people, and how they, you know, why Amazon is getting every conceivable positive thing that can happen to them, they're getting. And the post office is staying open an extra day for them, for God's sake. I mean, give me a break.
Mm-hmm.
They're lucky to deliver our letter if we want to, right? But the
market, no joke.
But I mean, something strange to me, Mike, and I can't put my finger on it, as to why this volatility is staying up so much. I mean, we've seen this. We went through the Obama years. I mean, every time it was getting a midterm election, he was going to lose the House, he was going to lose the Senate, because he originally had the House and the Senate, right, his first 2 years, when they put the Obamacare Act in. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he did. Every single time there was this volatility up in November, December, But always, if you had the stones, you could buy the Januaries, you know, sell the Novembers higher, and if you got away with it for 2 weeks, you made money on it, if you got away with it.
Honestly, I think what it is, you know, you might hear the expression that the market has no memory, or, you know, maybe the sea has no memory, or whatever the expression is. The market does have a memory, in my opinion.
I think it does too.
I think the very near memory that wasn't that long ago was 4 years ago when the last election took place in 2016. That caused a shock to the system, and it still hasn't gotten over it, it feels like. It still has this level of uncertainty that's been stuck in the market ever since that election, because it threw so many pieces out of where the expected probabilities of landing were. So the probabilities were so wrong going into that election that I think the market this time around has a bad taste in its mouth from 2016, and it hasn't forgotten about that, and the memory is still there, and I think volatility is pricing in somewhat of that historical memory.
Well, I would,
that's my opinion.
I would totally agree with that, and I also, the volatility being this high, the implied volatility, which means people think the market's going to move all over the place. I can't agree more. But you wonder, you never really know what the reason is for it. You always jump for the obvious one, you know. When people call me during the day and why are we up, why are we down, you know. I don't know. Matty Weber just came out of the can with a frown on his face. I mean, you lob the headline, but you really don't know if you're right, right? I mean, I think we're still reeling somewhat as the Fed's doing all this stuff, Mike. And this is just totally me, because this is closer to my game than most people. And I'll be happy to be alone there, because I wouldn't want you to try and do it, because it's a pain in the behind. And all it does is get you grumpy. I think we're still reeling from 2007 and 2008, where people like Larry Kudlow would be on TV every day saying, "This is the Goldilocks economy, the greatest story never told, and everything is just absolutely going great." It turns out the underpinnings of the entire economy were in total shambles because of the lending and stuff. And right now you've got the Fed. You know, I think some people, not just me, are saying, "Wait a minute! If we put through this stimulus package, we're going to be paying out the equivalent of 4 years. 4 years, Mike, of income tax revenue for the federal government." And everybody knows it's nowhere near enough, because the states need to be taken care of, everybody else needs to be taken care of. I mean, how exactly, and then we get, you know, I'll say people like Biden and Kamala Harris that have done nothing but a job in the government their whole life. Well, we just got to tax people more. What do they think these people, we just said that the earnings in companies is down 20% from last, where's this money coming from exactly that they're going to go tax people from? I mean, Lori Lightfoot's talking about a big increase in the gas tax and big increase in property taxes. You tell me that people off late at home, because I got some numbers here we go through after the break, regarding people's bank accounts and so forth after this CARES Act, $600 went away. Where do they think the money's coming from? They think people have a printing press in their basement or not? I don't.
No, they absolutely don't. You know, I think part of the problem right now is, you have two types of greed that exist. You have short-term greed, you have long-term greed. Long-term greed, you make the harder decisions now for more prosperity in the long run. Short-term greed, it fixes the problem right now, but it causes a lot more problems in the long run. So it just depends on which way we want to go. Either way, pain is going to... We can't avoid pain here, I don't think. So the question is, do you want to do it in the short term or do you want to do it in the long term? And I think that's truly what some of these policies are coming down to.
Well, yeah, but I would agree. We'll talk about more after the break. SPV is up 10, NASDAQ is up 24, a lot lower than we came in. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. He's Mr. Mike Hart. We have a housing starts total 1.545 million in September versus 1.457 expected. So they're not up as much as we thought, but we're doing a lot of housing starts as people are fleeing the apartments downtown, I think. Anyway, S&P futures up 10, Nasdaq futures up 28. They were up 20 and over 100 when we came in, so we're leaking some. Dow's only up 51, it was over 100 when we came in, but still up. DAX down 99, they're down more now, 0.8%. FTSE up 3, we call that flat. CAC around down 7.1%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 104.4%, Shanghai up 15.4%, and Hang Seng up 27.1%. As a review of yesterday, and this it's getting lost in the news today. Yesterday morning, we were talking about SPOOs being up 25, well, they ended up down 56. Dow Jones was up 275 and ended up down 410, or if you're down 450. NASDAQ was up about 100 and ended up down 192. So it was a massive turnaround yesterday. Not getting much press. 10-year, 0.78, actually up a couple of basis points, sorry. A bond minus 0.61, so that's kind of where it was. And Japan still positive 0.02. Oil, slight decrease, down 15 cents, 40.68. Brent down 29 cents, 42.33. Natural gas up 11 cents, 2.91. As Maddie will tell you about how cold it's going to be. RBOB unchanged. We got gold is down $6, still 1905, over 19. Silver down 4. They were both up pretty much yesterday, 24.65. This is interesting, though. Copper up almost 4 cents, 3.8 to 3.12. It's the highest we've seen it in a while. Maybe we got for us traffic weather sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're pretty quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Looks like some slow spots on the inbound Kennedy, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Same for the inbound Eisenhower. Stevenson's looked good all morning. Earlier crash on the outbound Ryan at Roosevelt has been clear now for an hour, and no resulting congestion from that, so that's good news. Inbound sides of the south side expressways are okay, too. Off the expressways, there's a crash on the south side. It says
75th and Lawrence. Car versus a building. I didn't know there was a Lawrence Avenue on the south side, but maybe.
Yes, there is. Over east.
There you go. It must run north and south, unlike the yes. major Lawrence Avenue on the north side.
Yes.
But it says a car versus a building at 75th and South Lawrence, and that's our only crash on the screen right now. Weather today, lots of clouds, but should be dry. A bit warmer than yesterday, too, as we'll be a high of 55 today. Right now it's cloudy and 45 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 97. Right now it's clear and 66. In sports, the Arizona Cardinals are now 4-2, second place in the NFC West as they blew out Dallas 38-10 last night down in Texas. Kyler Murray looked pretty darn good for the Cardinals, who might be a playoff team this year. Chiefs are definitely a playoff team. They went into Buffalo and beat the Bills 26-17. Bills are now 4-2. Chiefs are 5-1. World Series begins tonight. It'll be Tampa Bay versus the LA Dodgers. That's a 7:09 Central Time first pitch. Glasnow versus Kershaw. Chief.
I just get this thing. I was mentioning, Mike, not yesterday when you were on, but the day before, this whole idea of this, of the ads on this fair tax in Illinois, and where Pritzker's pulling up a bunch of money on his own, and then his sister's fighting him. I put ads the others. You couldn't make this crap up. So I was talking about the commercial with the two fat guys, old fat guys, one allegedly Democrat and Republican. Well, now I get this missive that the Republican is this guy Ty Peterson from Vienna, Illinois, wherever the hell that is. And now they're saying that the guy is he's sitting in the red chair, the red cooler. You know, of course, they have some beers in the cooler, and but the guy is supposedly the Republican. Well, it turns out the guy worked for the Illinois' largest public employee union, which is strongly supporting the tax hike. You know, get a little of this. Because he worked for that place, I don't know how this works. Somebody explain this to me. He worked for the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees Council 31. He made $95,000 a year in 2015. He was still listed as employee as July 2019, so he's probably not a Republican. Now, this council put over $6.8 million in political campaigns from 13 to 17, nearly three-fourths going to Democrats. But here's what's mystifying me, and I gotta get a guy. Maybe you're the guy, Mike. Peterson in 2017 began collecting a state pension now worth $27,500 a year, according to the Illinois State Employees Retirement System records. A loophole in the state law allowed him to work for the state for a year and buy $42,000 of state pension credits for his years as a union maker. How do you buy state pension credits? What are those? What does that even mean?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, and like it's just an example of many examples of how we have throughout the entire system antiquated laws that make no sense. And you have people who really do want to work within these because they work out to their benefit. I mean, hey, if you have a law that's allowing you to somehow get paid for an extra year or two, why would anyone want to change the law, especially people in power who are getting paid using that same law? So I think the system's riddled with these types of things. It's no exception in the trading world. The trading world is rifled with these types of trading rules and regulations that they really don't make any sense in today's age, and functionally they make no sense. You see that in tax law all the time. Taxes are constantly a game of you know, the cat and mouse or whatever it is. You know, you're constantly making one law just to find like four other laws get broken around that, or they don't get broken, they just get things like Apple, they end up not paying taxes. So I think that type of when you hear something like that, it's frustrating to hear. But I don't know how you get around it.
Well, he paid $42,600 essentially for a pension that's going to pay him $27,000 a year. The guy's 55, so if he lives to 85, his benefits will have been $1.1 million. That's not a bad deal for $42,000. Where do we get that turnaround?
I don't want to know what I'm going to get.
I'll tell you what, if I could do that for my clients, I think I'd have a few more clients, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I'd be signing up for you.
Send me $42,000 and I'll pay you $27,000 for the rest of your life. Manny, can you imagine if I could do that?
It's a good deal.
Even Venkman would be my client, for God's sake. Maddie's dog would be in here with his little checkbook. That's startling. Anyway, Jeff, what I wanted to talk about is we never really can beat the volatility to death because it's such a fascinating subject. But I got two. There's a Jesse Pound. How's that for a name? This article on CNBC. He's trying to. He has a couple of charts here talking about how the CARES Act savings are running out for unemployed Americans. Well, I mean that's been. I know Maddie knows probably ad nauseum, but that's been my theme really for the last two or three, 4 weeks. Hey, we came up with programs to help people till the end of June or July, and now here we are October, and we're still making what I consider to be pretty dumb decisions regarding the COVID, and at least on a local level, and all of a sudden the money's running out, all we hear every day is Munchkin and Pelosi have a phone call, and the market runs up, and then nothing happens and runs back down. I mean, this is kind of getting old, at least to me it is. But anyway, there's a couple of charts here he's got the dates on here, so I won't be crazed. The $600 a week is a spending chart of people that are employed and unemployed. And this is weekly spending in 2020, employed versus unemployed. We started the year out where the employed people spent $650 a week and unemployed, you know, like $600. But and as the year went by, you know, peaking out in March, we had both sides spending about $700 a week. Well, that dropped to $400 in April. Okay, when everything was going really bad, and the way back up, you actually had unemployed people starting to spend more than employed people per week, right, as they got the $600 benefit. Well, now since that's ended, it expires expired when the end of July, right, Maddie? Well, the unemployed number is now dropping like a stone. It's gone from 700 a week down to like 580. So that's kind of a real number. And then, but the more telling is the median checking account balance, employed versus unemployed. The people who are unemployed actually put more money in their checking account from April through August when it ended than people who are employed, because people are actually getting more than they were making in their life. And they were putting some in the bank. Well, that has dropped like an absolute rock. Since the end of August, just in September, they were 120% of their loan balance in January. This is weird though, because it's percentage of loan balance. So if somebody's unemployed and they had 100 grand in their bank account, they went up to 120, that's only 20%. But if somebody had 2 grand and it went up to 4, that's 100%, right? So it's, you gotta be careful with these numbers. You always have to look at the base on the numbers on these things. Anyway, but their account balance is dropping. It'll be back to where it was in February in like another 2 weeks. So it's really, really affected people. And I have to believe the expiration of the PPP has affected an awful lot of businesses as well. So, you know, I don't know how much more they can do, but I'm saying if the answer is nothing, I think we're going to have some real issues between now and Thanksgiving and maybe Christmas.
Well, definitely. You know, and I think, like, you look at these policies and you kind of scratch your head saying, well, what is the purpose of this policy? Why, you know, there's no solution that came out of this policy. And to me, it says all they did is they had to buy time. Why did they have to buy time? Well, I don't know. But the policy seems to indicate that all they were doing effectively is saying, we'll have a better handle on this in 5 or 6 months. And now we're at the point where we don't have a better handle on this in 5 or 6 months. So the question becomes, do you buy time again? Do you do the exact same sort of backwards accounting and buy yourself more time in order to see if 5 or 6 more months is actually what's needed in order to find some balance here? And I think it's a really, really hard debate to get to the heart of the problem, and actually it's a really hard question to answer. What is the right thing to do at this point when we've already gone down the road as far as we've already gone down?
Well, I think people in March when they started passing these laws, or April, really thought that the end of June, end of July, we would have a handle and that would be essentially good enough, that the government would respond, it would tide people over for 90 days essentially, 90 days, 105 days, whatever it is.
I do too, yeah.
And all of a sudden now you're there. And now you can't get people to do what they're supposed to be doing. Now, whether they should or shouldn't, whether the disease is still viable enough, but it strikes me that there's nowhere in our lifetime is the risk going to be zero, where you're going to say unequivocally today, you can go back to work and you will not catch this and whatever. That day is never going to come. So the question is, I mean, if you had 90% herd immunity in Chicago and, with vaccines and other stuff, the other 10% is still, the question is how much is enough? I mean, every time you walk out of the house, you take a risk. An asteroid could land on my head, you know, a window could come out of a building. The question is how much is enough? And the way we've bifurcated this and politics and fear and other things like that, I don't know how the hell we get anybody to make that call, Mike. And so, I mean, if I was in Congress, I'd say right now, I'll go another 2 months, even though I know what it does to us going forward and those kinds of things. But we're going to just have to suck it up. We can't just go try and get it back in people's taxes next year, because the reason why we're giving it to them is because they don't have it, right?
Right.
So if I really thought that 2 more months would be enough, would I go with it? Yes. But now that's not... My questions have to be, are we going to tell people to go back to work? And then the schools go open up in 2 months. Well, we don't know. We have to see what happens. Maybe never. Well, if I'm just going to pour more money in the rat hole and all of a sudden now it's January and people close, what have I gained?
Right. And you know, I think going back to what we were talking about earlier, I think, you know, the real question is not so much the greed aspect, but it's the, you know, when do we want to actually deal with this? And how far can you kick the can down the road before it has... And this, I don't think, is a problem that you can continually kick the can down the road. I think the problem, it's reared its head up, and we'd love to just sweep it under the rug or make it disappear for 5 more months and then see where it's at then. But I think it's a systematic problem that's growing, and it's getting worse every day that it's not being... somewhat assaulted or at least slowed down. So I don't think we can continually kick the can down the road. Can we do it for another 6 months? Probably.
I'm going to say 3.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 6 months would be, what did we spend last time? We spent $3 trillion and it kicked it really from end of April to the end of July. May, June, July, 3 months. So...
Yeah,
I mean, so if we're gonna do 6, I don't think we can do $6 trillion here. Can you?
The idea of doing $6 trillion is it's so astronomically out of the realm of anything that we could compute, really, or say anything, any model from history. Nothing. We have no reference point to say what $6 trillion could do to the system. I think it's an experiment that would be unbelievably challenging to take a chance on.
Well, plus last time, and I understand what they did, because they confused it, shall we say, with monetary policy. And when I say that, there's people who want this helicopter money out there, and they don't seem to think that there's any issue with inflation, but there is. And they're going to be wrong. I know it, my heart of hearts. They're going to be wrong. And I hope they all get strung up for it, to be honest with you, but they won't. Figuratively. This time when you put the PPP out there and you look through the list of people in Illinois that, got over 120, there's just 27,000 firms, Mike, got over $150,000 in the state of Illinois. And I'm gonna say that if you went through there, you and I on every page of 20 names would say, these 10 people shouldn't have got it. There's churches in there that got it, for God's sake.
Right.
There's people that haul trash that never missed a day that got it.
Sure there are shell companies that got it.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
You know, don't even exist, and they got it.
If you go through the list...
Whenever the government does a handout, it's guaranteed to be just filled with voids and things that make no sense. And I think it's a guarantee.
What's even worse is there's companies that got, and I went through the, I mean, there were, on every page there'd be a company that had, especially come to the churches, would have $270,000, and at the end of July had no employees. They later be off anyway. I mean, there's a lot of that going on. Or the company went under anyway. You know, maybe they paid people for 3 months and then they laid everybody off. What did you gain? You gained 3 months, I guess, but you can't do that again.
And that's just it. Does the end justify the means? I mean, there's no doubt, like, the whole thing is going to be, I mean, and especially the speed at which it has to get done, it's a disaster of, you know, from an organizational point. But does the end justify the means? You know, meaning, does 3 months make all the difference?
Well, it
if
is.
You're able to buy 3 months.
It is if everything's back to normal at the end of 3 months.
Right. Which I would say that's, if you're going to bet, that's an extremely low probability.
I would say you're right. But look at the difference in where I keep pushing at the Federal Reserve in these. I'm going to say economists that need to go back to the classroom. This whole idea of this helicopter money. It's like when the $1,200 checks came out. I mean, I don't know anything about your family, but if your grandmother got the check and she died last week, they were encouraging you to cash it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you, that was like for a few days until there was enough pushback to where maybe that wasn't their official policy, but by and large, they wanted you to cash it. Now, if your grandmother would have died 2 months ago, and I sure hope she's still alive and with you and doing good, but if she'd have died last month and you cashed her Social Security check, that's a freaking felony, for God's sake.
Yeah,
yeah. And this one, when they talk about helicopter money, it's exactly what it is. That's what I don't get about the people. I mean, maybe they haven't had an economics class. The term helicopter money means you open up a helicopter door at State and Madison and you throw $100 bills out there and you don't care who gets them as long as they get in the system. That's what it means. So to get at the bottom of that and say, geez, Matty Weber was faster than the chief and he got $500 bills. The poor chief only got one. They don't care. The fact is, it's out there, right, Matty? It's the term,
yeah.
Helicopter money. So yeah. We'll roll with it. They don't care if you cash it or your grandmother cash it. The fact is, somebody got the $1,200. That was the policy, right? And the same thing with the PPP. We don't care. If we give it to the wrong companies, who cares? It's still out there. They're still going to spend. It had nothing to do with those companies or those people getting the checks, did it? And in my opinion,
it had nothing to do with that. I think it's the idea of debt and it's the idea of leveraging the present to pay for the future.
Right.
And I think it's the idea that, if debt has to get repaid, we want to repay it as far away as humanly possible. So let's let this helicopter money come out and let's see if we can create even a phony scenario of normalcy. In which maybe grab some breathing room in order to rebuild some sort of new type of infrastructure, and just the idea of buying time right now, it's a dangerous game, and I feel like we're falling down that road. Who knows if we actually get there, but it does seem like that is the direction everything is heading, and it's been heading there since the beginning of this whole thing at the beginning of the year.
Well, Mike, yeah, we have a couple of minutes, but one of the most chilling things I read, other than concentration camp stuff, sort of The Exorcist when the head spun around, most chilling thing that I read was, I'd always heard about the Weimar Republic. We studied a little bit in school, but like half of one class, right? Never really dug into it. And, so I said, you know what? They had huge inflation. I want to know what their market did during their inflationary period. So these guys poured money into the system. I forget what even it was in the Deutschmark. It was before the Deutschmark, whatever the damn thing was. They poured money into the system, and the market went from like 200 to a million. So the market acted just like our market is acting now. It's going straight up with the money. But the weird part of it is you eviscerated anybody with savings. You basically killed yours. But I didn't realize that there was an absolute plan. There was a method to the madness. That they owed France and Germany reparations from World War One, so they felt if they kept trying to get they felt they couldn't afford to pay it, so they were paying. This is so screwed up. Like they were paying France and Germany reparations. France and Germany were paying us the World War One debt, and Germany was selling bonds over here to American people. It ended up being worthless. I mean, talk about a circle bleep, right? Anyway, so they do this. And they absolutely kill their population. All their savings are worth nothing. I mean, people are eating scraps of bread in the street. At the end of the day, they did cause a renegotiation with France and Britain, and the Weimar government declared it all a success. They totally inflated everybody and buried their population, but they got what they wanted. They got the renegotiation with France and Britain, and they ended up with Adolf Hitler. How'd that work out? You know, so, I mean, it wasn't like it was done on purpose. And I'm wondering if our buffoons are going to do the same thing, that they're going to inflate the hell out of the place so that when the government pays your money back 20 years from now, it's worth a third of what it was today. I mean, that's one of the best ways to get rid of debt is to inflate your way out of it if you're a government.
I mean, I really hope that's not the case, but, you know, like the type of policy, I can see the resemblance there. You know, at the end of the day, we're talking about first world powers playing games as if they're the Weimar Republic, and it doesn't add up. We know that doesn't add up, and we know that, you know, the concept of, you know, reducing debt by deflating the dollar is an absurd, you know, it goes back to economics 101. These are basic laws of economics that seem to be at risk of being broken, and that's the part that really makes me scratch my head.
Oh yeah, it makes me too. Mike, thank you very much. But S&P futures up 12, NASDAQ futures up 25, looking good, but we were looking a lot better earlier. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.